What a great way to start a program. That's Cuban pianist, bandleader, composer, and arranger Chucho Valdez and the Afro-Cuban Messengers with Zawinul's Mambo, of course, referring directly to the wonderful, the late Joseph Erich Joe Zawinul of Austria, a jazz keyboardist and composer who just was legendary, playing alongside some of the greats in jazz, including Miles Davis and Cannonball Adderley and a host of others. He was well known as the composer of this particular tune, and it was wonderful that we have another legend in the world of jazz keyboarding, Chucho Valdez, who very often performed with his father, Bebo Valdez, and it's a wonderful thing to get to know that. And it's a wonderful tribute to how musicians have no problems with each other. And so maybe we ought to encourage music as a way of bringing the world together. Anyway, this is from Chucho Valdez's 2010 album, Chucho's Steps. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead. It is Friday. It is August the 7th, 2015, and it's time to free your mind. This is where you take the conversation where you want it to go, and the number is 888-874-4888. Many issues, of course, are in play, and I'd be interested in what you're thinking out there, but this is your decision. You do the driving today. Wherever you are taking the conversation, that's where we're going. So let's start in New York with Kamal. You're on the air. Yes, Kamal, you're on the air.
Yes, hey, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Well, first I want to say that I'm from the Freedom Party, which is also stationed in Brooklyn, New York, along with Reginald PV and others. I just wanted to talk more about the debate last night, if everybody was watching.
Okay.
I just thought that was really strange. I feel like there was many questions that wasn't necessarily answered properly, such as one that was based on the Black Lives Matter. There was a question that pertaining to what that person was going to do if they were to become president. I feel like he was wholly dancing around the question. As far as Donald Trump goes, he's like, I don't know, like totally a joke. All the things that, pretty much all the questions that they was delivering to him, I felt like they was kind of making a joke out of him, like when they was talking about his central mistakes that he's made in business, why he would be an eligible candidate. Like, I didn't think any of his answers, and I didn't think really any of the responses was pretty much good coming from him. But I do find that it was interesting that a lot of them agreed on certain things, such as how well Ronald Reagan ruled. And we already know about how he did and all the bad things that he had did going towards the Black community. I just thought that debate last night was really strange, really strange.
Okay. Could you tell us why you used the word strange?
It's strange in the sense of there was a lot of things, again, that I felt that they all agreed upon. Number one, they all seemed like, well, two or three of them seemed like they really liked Ronald Reagan, again, which is somebody that we definitely wouldn't support. I believe it was Ben Carson that spoke on military. A few of them spoke on military, but I feel that she spoke on making the military stronger, and I feel like there's a lot of things that we should actually implement into our lives as Black people, you know, such as not as far as military goes, but as far as making sure that the home, making sure like our mindset is pretty much strong. So I was pretty much doing like a lot of comparisons. Military, I feel like it needed to be strong. Like family-wise, you know, we need to strengthen up on learning and community economics, and
Did anything surprise you?
To compare a lot of the things that they were saying.
Anything surprise
anybody
you?
Anybody who was, I'm sorry?
Did anything surprise you?
Okay. I didn't realize that we was going through a cyber wars in Russia. I mean, I've heard little things about cyber wars that was going on in China, but to have, I don't know, cyber wars on two ends, China and Russia, I thought that was pretty weird, pretty interesting, though.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. Thanks for getting us started today. Just so you know, I tuned in for about a good 10 minutes of the debate, and then I decided to watch something far more informative, which was National Geographic, and watched about animals. I made up my mind a long time ago that if I am supposed to be watching a debate of national importance by a national party hosted by a national media organization, and the cameras pan the audience, and it was practically an almost all-white operation, then they can't possibly be talking to me, and there couldn't possibly be anything going on there that should concern me. So I decided, based on that alone, that we should have some criteria. You're not going to insult me as a consumer, just even watching a debate, that you are going to be in my face about the fact that you deliberately exclude America. I mean, this was white people talking to other white people about the concerns of white people. And I have no use for that. So I just tuned in. First of all, I always like the idea of looking at the context and environment in which a thing is occurring. Now, if they had said, this is a debate, whites are discussing matters of importance to whites, and most the audience will be white, the viewership would be white, the media people are white, except for Ben Carson, everybody else on the stage is pretty much white, including people like Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, who don't really identify as being Latino. So whiteness ruled. That was the first thing. And nobody had any apologies to make about that. So I said, you know, I am real clear about what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to be shoved into that demographic. Because somebody is deciding that they're going to have a conversation among themselves. I said, go right ahead. You do that. But don't factor me in. Don't depend on my cooperation. So I'm out. Include me out, as they say. All right, we get to Joel, also from New York.
Hi, Idris. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, lately I've been sort of looking through the whole history of the exposure of torture by the government over the past few years, and I came back to the subject again because it struck me that as this political campaign starts, and as I sort of in a disinterested way view it, like you, from the outside, if only to maintain my sanity, it struck me that no one is even going to discuss this. No one. The Democrats won't discuss it. Only the independents, of course, will discuss it, but of course they don't count. They're unpeople. And here's the rub, Utrice. We still know very little about the government's torture program. And that's not just because 90% of the CIA report remains sequestered, you know, at their offices in Virginia. And you would think that, well, maybe they're keeping all of this quiet because they want to protect their sources and methods. Hardly. You can go to any book on the Spanish Inquisition and learn the techniques that the CIA, in effect, used. They've been updated, but the techniques haven't changed that much in five centuries. Just add, you know, a few jolts of electricity. So while the CIA wants to keep the details of its torture methods cloaked in mystery, the agency, as I, you know, look back at this whole story, was very happy to let the fact that it was torturing prisoners of its covert operations slip out. And this was intended to send a message to the agency's enemies that terrible torments were going to be inflicted on, you know, on the bodies and minds of anyone who stood in the way, anyone from jihadis to whistleblowers. But now the psychology gets a little tricky. And the agency also wanted the existence, I think, of the torture program to leak out to the American public. And this is what I'm really getting at, because I think they wanted to whet the growing appetite for vengeance and perhaps maybe to distract attention from the agency's records of its own massive blunders. And by all accounts, as you look back over the past 4 or 5 years, the ploy seems to have worked. And in the sort of befouled moral consciousness of post 9/11, a stout majority of the country, in the last poll I saw, suggested that some 59% support the CIA's torture program, and many of those back the use of torture, even though they know it's ineffective as a means of intelligence grabbing. In other words, they really crave blood, and virtually any Muslim's blood will do, regardless of culpability. And aside from a few editorial boards and human rights groups, no one seems too distraught by all these revelations that have come out.
Even you know, interestingly, Joel, just last night, again, in this great national debate, one of the questions, and it seemed as if the host was saying, aren't you going to favor this? One of the questions asked of the candidates was, will you bring back waterboarding? I'm saying, I mean, it was such a
bring
surreal,
it back.
Yeah, pretty much. Will you endorse or will you, reintroduce as if it has ever gone out, but will you bring back waterboarding?
And what they say.
You know,
I can imagine what they say.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, what I'm getting at, Eutrice, is that this is it represents a kind of a twisted sign of imperial maturity, in which the country really comes to terms, you know, with its own true character. Only the most gullible of us seems to cling to the, you know, to a naive notion that torture is un-American. I mean, after all, this is the country that happily funded the School of Americas, right, for decades, where graduate seminars were offered in the finer points of torture and assassination for the butchers of Latin America. And these days, I think the kind of dehumanization that is associated with torture takes place, I think, in the lecture halls of Yale, Georgetown, and the University of Chicago, where these torture architects and architects of torture and rendition learn the bureaucratic tools and legalisms of their trade. And we now know, then I'll get off, we now know that no one was going to be held to account for these acts, just like the bankers weren't held to account. There isn't going to be no naming of names, no disciplinary actions, no terminations, no prosecutions. And in fact, I think we have a phenomenon that Keats might have described as negative culpability, where the perpetrators of some of the most vile crimes in American history simply dissolve into the midst of the system. So don't expect anyone to talk about this subject over the next year or year and a half. It just doesn't matter. It's not that important.
Thanks, Joel, for your contribution today. We go to Kingston with Pete. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, Pete.
Hi. I have things I wonder about regarding this debate, but that previous speaker was so right on and spoke so well, I'm a little intimidated, but and I totally agree with him. I've just been wondering about... Excuse me?
That's Joel.
Oh, yeah, he's excellent. I've just been wondering about this comedy, that is this GOP campaign starting very early. I get concerned about respectfulness towards the American United States government, and this is how we operate on Fox News, which is interesting. I did not and am not able to watch any of it. I confess to having a weak stomach. I just can't deal with it. What is going on? And so, you know, in my little mind, I have my wonderings, and maybe they're cooperating with the Democrats. For some reason, the powers that be want the Democrats to win. I see very little difference between them anymore. They're all paid by the same people. But to be representing the United States in front of the world with this insanity, just making a joke, a farce, a disrespectful farce of our government just astounds me. And I always tend to think there's some reason behind it, because I don't think these people are stupid, whoever's behind it. I don't think they've lost it. Well, they have lost their minds, but they generally are wily about what they do. So I just wonder what's going on, and I'm curious if you have any thoughts.
Well, I kind of expressed them earlier this week when I talked about the fact that don't expect very much in the way of enlightenment about things. What is going on now, especially in this phase of things, is that the media are really demonstrating to the campaigns, the different campaigns, why it is they need to get the bigger chunk of their campaign budgets there. We have as much as $5 billion that will be available in terms of campaign advertising. Media outlets are just trying their best to outdo the competition. And in order to do that, they have to demonstrate a certain kind of fidelity, that they have not really, you know, done damage to any campaign. They have stuck reasonably close to the, quote, journalistic tenets when a story was unavoidable and they had to cover it, but they didn't do any additional damage to the candidate by going really doing good journalistic work. In other words, they have behaved themselves. So they've been compliant, and this is the season in which they demonstrate to these various campaigns how and why they qualify for the lion's share of whatever the advertising budget is. And I mentioned that Barack Obama's campaign, 2012 campaign, spent more than $700 million in advertising campaign ads. This is big-time money, and none of the media organizations are likely to offend any particular candidate or his or her campaign by going too deep. So it's a romance, and everybody understands the rules. They're not going outside of that until contracts are signed and until they know that they have a sizable chunk of that those billions of dollars that are coming downstream. Now, when the contracts are signed, even then we may not see an aggressive media coverage. But the media, I mean, Fox News made no bones about it. When you have the kinds of questions being asked, you look at where Donald Trump is situated with respect to the candidates. He's smack in the middle. All these things are negotiated. All these things are reasons that now Fox could go back to the Trump campaign and say, well, you know, we were nice to you. Be nice to us. So give us X percent of that budget that you're going to spend. You see, this is how it works. Now, they'll let you think that they're covering politics, but they're not. They are just right now in the season. They're doing what they have to do to demonstrate to the various campaigns that they are being nice. And by giving them a certain chunk of their advertising budget, you know, we can make life a lot easier for you. The media's principally Fox, absolutely responsible for the meteoric rise of Donald Trump. There's no other reason to explain it than the media were complicit in creating this candidate. We see people like Anderson Cooper of CNN literally prostrate themselves before him. And this is all not just the decision of the individual hosts. The individual hosts don't make these decisions. It is from the top. The sales department and the legal department and the higher ups that pretty much, you know, send the orders down. This is what we are going to do right now. And CNN would be able, when their time comes to make their play for the advertising bucks, they would be able to say things like, look, we gave you X number of hours of airtime with a value of X number of dollars already. And it was for free. So we have already made an in-kind contribution to your campaign. Now let's talk about a budget. And let's talk about how much of that we're going to get. And we want X percent of that. And that's how it works.
Wow.
I know.
So that's even more, oh, my Lord. So in this whole scenario, there's no care or concern for the United States government or its people or the nation.
Oh, well, they will kind of make it look that way. But right now, it's business. It's money all the way around. It's big, big money. You know, Hillary Clinton already opened up her nice little purse and let out $2 million in campaign ads for the next 5 weeks, $1 million in New Hampshire and $1 million in Iowa. That's pretty big money in terms of the media out there in Iowa and New Hampshire. And she is going to spend that money. Now, in the meantime, her campaign will be raising, they have a target of $2.5 billion. The vast majority of that will go to campaign ads. So when you look at the kind of money these campaigns are going to be spending, and that's just them, then come the PACs, the organizations supporting the candidates. The Koch brothers, for example, have set aside almost $1 billion to influence public opinion about the campaigns of candidates that they select. This is money. This has nothing to do, very little to do with politics. Money is ruling everything right now. And there are, you know, what they said was a debate was really a kind of Q&A. This is not a debate. When you've seen debates, you see debates in places like England, you see real debates in the Caribbean. I grew up in Trinidad where people actually did debate. A standard was set. You become accustomed to hearing the back and forth on particular issues. They don't do that here. This is strictly marketing, political marketing. That's all it is.
Wow. Thank you, Utrice.
Thanks a lot, Pete, for your call today. From New York City, Frank, you're on the air.
Well, Utrice, this is Frank McLean Sewer. How are you?
Oh, my gosh. How are you?
Doing nicely. I apologize to the rest of your listeners, but there's just two basic points that I want to share with you and your listeners. One, the personal. Please, I sent you an email to your Gmail account.
Okay.
But also, speaking of big money, you know, I listened to your podcast on the 4th relating to Detroit, and that, of course, resonates because you have, what do you have? You have Greece, you have Detroit, and you have Corzine. They all play a role in how big money is managed, how politics benefits. The test case was, of course, 2012 Cyprus, where the account holders were blocked from extracting their funds, except the billionaires who had corresponding accounts in London could reach their money. But, of course, that wasn't very well publicized. Then the second test, at least from my view, was MF Global. Corzine obviously took the money.
Corzine, you have to describe who he is or what the context of this.
I'm sorry. The former senator from New Jersey and the former governor of the state of New Jersey, who opened up the hedge fund, trading in sovereign debt. And in particular, one series of transactions involved, supposedly unbeknownst to him, the use of $1.2 billion of client funds, which, of course, is illegal, criminal, and not the bargain that investors sign up for. But if you look to see what happened with that particular type of transgression, the company got away with paying a fine of $100 million. No one has gone to jail. And the message from my view is, like in Detroit, you take on credit, you take on debt, and the government and the politics of it get synergized so that people either forget or they accommodate. And that's the brief statement I wanted to make in terms of big money and how that may function in the geopolitical world.
But proceed.
No, that was it. I don't want to take up too much time.
That was it. That's the message today. But absolutely, yeah. No question about it. You wonder how it is this Justice Department, particularly, has been so forgiving to the banksters, as I call them. Every so often, we get news headlines saying such and such a bank has been fined or has agreed to pay X billions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars because they did such and such in contravention of the law. However, my question is quite simple. Why is it that these institutions still have a charter? Why are they still allowed to do business? When a bank repeatedly just abuses its privileges under the charter as a lending institution, supposedly regulated by the government, and is found time and again to be afoul of these laws that it ought to follow, and all it has to do is just pay a fine. Obviously, if they're charged $1 billion and they can pay it, it means they have more than $1 billion. But so why? My question simply is, why is it that they still have charters? Why aren't they shut down? I mean, if you were running a restaurant and, every couple of months when the health inspector comes along and finds that you still, they pointed out things that are violations of the law, and they come around once and they find it again, come around another time, they find it. Well, the logical thing would be, after a certain number of times of running afoul of sanitation laws, you should be shut down. But the banks under the U.S. Justice Department, and this goes across Republican and Democratic administrations, they still allow these people to be in business. Hedge funds that have been criminally indicted and convicted, they still have their licenses and their authority to operate. Amazing what money can do. We have a candidate, we have several candidates who are multimillionaires. So we are clear that this is the election pretty much dominated by the oligarchy. The wealthy are running this election, and they see the world from a different perspective. So the point that Frank is making here, I think, is so valid, but we know this. The question is, why don't we see the government responding in a logical way? If this is the law, if it were an average citizen, you would be so done, it's not even funny. But when you have all these billions of dollars in assets, somehow they allow you to skate through. And it is a global thing. It's a global practice now. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eugene.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. How are you doing?
Pretty good today. Well, I'd like to talk about that since the Republicans are in the spotlight, I'd like to talk about a Republican scam that degrades America and hurts its people. And in 1988, at the Republican National Convention, George Bush said, "Read my lips, no new taxes." And of course, you know about Norquist with his no new taxes pledge. And well, it turns out that in 1930, a full breakfast was about 30 cents, and now that same breakfast is about $5. And as the cost of everything goes up, the cost of running cities and towns goes up as well. And when we vote for no new taxes, then we can't keep pace with the rate of inflation. And then we have to start laying off policemen and firemen, slashing social programs, especially for the elderly and the youth, reducing food programs. Essentially, the Republican Party, by using the no new taxes scam, they put us on the card. and since we can't keep up with everything, and then we start borrowing money, and then before you know it, we have to sell off assets like local utilities, like the waterworks, to private corporations. So I believe this is one of the ways that the Republicans use to pass the commons to the corporations.
But is it strictly the Republicans, or has this also applied to the Democrats?
It does apply to Democrats as well, but I think it's a major Republican platform here. This guy Norquist, you know, he's like a very powerful guy, and he wants everybody to sign the No New Taxes pledge. I mean, it's really, I think it's a trick on their part to really wring the life out of towns and areas where, and essentially, you have to sell off the commons to pay off the loans. And the banks, of course, are doing very well on it. It's really a Republican game. But so that's what I feel. That's why George Bush, read my lips, no new taxes. That was it, you know. They had found a way to really get the wealth, take the wealth from the people and hand it over to the corporations.
No question. Thank you, Harvey, for your call today.
Thank you, Trace.
We go back to New York. New York is dominating today. What's going on with all the other states? Why are you letting New York dominate the conversation? This is what I want to know. But Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
PR and family.
Thank you.
Yeah, the comment on your comment, the rat droppings, as it were, is embedded in the system in terms of your restaurant analysis. So we have zero prosecutions of police beatings, maimings. It's just become routine. Would like to have you bring Brother Alton on again and have him, have him focus on these spate of killings in these jails where people shouldn't even be in the jails to begin with. And and if you would allow some time, because we want to also interface with him. So maybe he could ruminate with you for half an hour, and then we would get to bring out questions and perspectives to him. I want to comment on this. I like you, didn't even watch it. I was watching a good movie, and on a commercial, I watched 10 seconds of Donald's rant, and that was enough already. First of all, we need to understand all of these, including the Democrats, are clowns, liars, fools, and reprobates. Did I neglect to say thieves and warmongering murderers? This is part of the system. These people who are chosen, who are selected, are puppets, and we need to really try to figure out how to focus on the puppet masses. And a good example, Utrice and family, would be Obama. He's got a year and a half left, and he's finally going to put out some rhetoric around the mass incarceration system. 2 years ago, he had his Justice Department could have let go 5,000 people who were in prison for crack cocaine, I believe it was. And his DOJ opposed that, and then he comes up with 46 prisoners being commuted. I mean, that's not even a drop in the bucket. And I thought I was up on this, but some of those were in for a life sentence for some drug possession. Now, that goes beyond the pale, so we don't even know the full of it. Utrice, if you would mention the name of Choo Choo's album, and hopefully you give us a separate listing of your music, your brilliant musical choices. Utrice?
I'm hearing you.
Yes,
Choo Choo Valdez is one
name
of my favorites.
Choo Choo's album. I didn't quite get that.
Yeah, it's called the album. What's the name of the album? The album is Chucho's Steps. It's 2010 album.
Steps. Okay, excellent. Appreciate that. And lastly,
as you spoke
about
mass incarceration, I just want to give a plug here. That's going to be the topic of our discussion on the 12th. That's Wednesday. We're talking about the Stop mass incarceration program that is has been started nationally. Our guest will be Carl Dix, and we'll be talking about that on Wednesday.
Excellent choice. And lastly, let me just ask for some feedback from the family. I suggested some research and some sites such as James Perloff and No Disinfo regarding the 29 DOJ monies. And this is documented because, you know, there has to be a record when that kind of money goes out of the Department of Justice. And other anomalies like smiling family members, complete forgiveness, something we don't really usually see. And I'll listen to your other callers, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Well, I did look into that $29 million that people have been bandying around on the internet saying the family got a lot of money, was a great payout. But actually, it was not. That's not the case. The federal government did allocate $29 million in the shooting in South Carolina, but the bulk of that money really went to support investigation of it through the Crime Victim Assistance Formula grant program. The families did get some assistance with burying their family members and so forth. In the same way that the victims of the Colorado shooting in Aurora, Colorado in 2012, the families and the families of the victims were given assistance through that Crime Victim Assistance Formula program. The Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in 2012, similarly, money was disbursed to help the families within the hour of distress. And similarly with the Boston Marathon bombing in 2013, where $8.3 million was given to the family. So there is this misinformation and disinformation about the fact that the families got $29 million. Incorrect, absolutely incorrect. The federal government has a program, and other states have programs, pretty much that mirror the same intent of the federal program, which is in situations, calamities like this, funds are made available to assist families who are in extreme distress through no fault of their own. When calamities like these happen, catastrophes like these happen, there is a response, and part of the response is some kind of federal assistance. One imagines that, of course, there are qualifications for that, and people have to go through all kinds of things to qualify for that kind of assistance. But it is incorrect, absolutely incorrect, to say that the families received $29 million. No, the $29 million was put into a pot of money that the state and local governments could use as they saw fit in trying to deal with a mass murder, a major catastrophe that would involve, among other things, investigators, additional overtime, and so forth. That's the bulk of the payments to these local governments and state governments go toward that, with a portion, and a proportionately small portion, going to assist the families in dealing with the financial burdens that are just unexpectedly thrust upon them. So we have to be very careful when things are put out there, and we have to check the facts. And as I said, it's very, very important to always check the facts. I want to take this break and come back and talk about something that I hope will be of interest to you. We'll take this break and come right back. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and I wanted to talk a bit about health, because it is so vital. As you know, I've discussed with you my own situation, being diagnosed in April with stage 4B cancer. Came out of nowhere, but I have to deal with it, and I am dealing with it, following some protocols and under the care, the direct care of Gary Null. I want to share with you the idea, and I've been promoting this idea, of really taking very seriously our health. We really have to do it. If you're not around, you're not going to be able to make a difference. You know, you have to be around to make a difference. As long as possible, it helps indeed. I want to share with you two things. One, my guest today, Luan Pinesi, who works very closely with Gary in staging these retreats that focus entirely and comprehensively on health. And thanks, Luan, for joining us today.
It is my pleasure to be here, Eutrice.
Thank you. But let's hear about, let's hear a testimonial about a person who, like me, and I talked with her myself, had been in a rather difficult situation health-wise and decided to take charge of her health. Her name is Joyce Riley, and this is what she says.
My name is Joyce, and I have just finished a two-week stay at Gary's retreat, and I can't really say what this has meant to me because I don't even know yet, but I know that it's totally turned my life around. It's been the most incredible experience of my life for a lot of reasons. I came down here as a stage four cancer patient ready to go into hospice. And I'm walking out of here, literally walking without a cane, without anything to help me, and feeling better than I felt in a year, 3 years. And I'm so grateful, so incredibly grateful that I've had this time to reevaluate a lot of things in my life. I literally was unable to walk without some type of aid when I came here, and within 3 days, I'd put the cane down and I was walking and sort of power walking, nothing like what they do down here, but I was doing it in the best way that I could. So I cannot say enough, and I don't even expect people to believe what I'm saying because it seems so phenomenal that I would have a breast tumor that would go down almost two-thirds while I'm here because of the attention, because of the energy, because of everything here. I go home a different person. Literally, go home a different person. So I can only say thank you to everyone here, to all the people that have played a role in this. I sort of came here against my better judgment, not believing that anything could really make that much of a difference, and knowing that if I had 2 months left to live, that at least maybe Gary Null could help me make the best of those 2 months. And I go back fully charged and ready to go to work and continue where I left off 3 years ago. I was a registered nurse for 40 years, and one of the things that I did was I was a certified chemo nurse, chemotherapy nurse, and worked a lot in heart, lung, liver, kidney transplant. But my belief in chemotherapy was that all my patients that had had chemotherapy were dead, and I was not going to take it, so I went it the natural route. I had three breast tumors initially 3 years ago that metastasized into bone cancer, liver cancer, and spinal cancer. And at this point, I don't feel that there is any pain there like I was having. I was having excruciating bone pain for which I was taking narcotics for. And now that is gone. And so I am just blessed to have been given this opportunity and every person here that has made this happen. I only wish I could make it happen for other people so they can benefit from this also.
That was Joyce Riley talking about her experience at a point where she decided she was going to take charge of her life. She attended a retreat. And Luann, another retreat is ongoing. Tell us about what happens in this retreat. What was it that Joyce Riley experienced in this retreat?
Eutrice, I would say that she shifted her energy. She shifted her energy from focusing on dying, from the devastating effects that the cancer was having on her body, and she shifted her energy away from all that, and she put it on a whole new perspective of her life and what she was doing here on the planet. Now, that sounds so simplistic, but what happens is Gary has created an environment. Every blade of grass at this villa, this is an Italian villa, and it is overflowing with plants and flowers, and he's got chickens and guinea hens running around eating up scorpions and insects so that no one has to worry about being affected by them. There are the gardens. He has formal gardens and statues all over the place. So every place you turn in these acres of this Italian villa is a haven of peace and beauty. There are birds all over the place. There's gigantic pine trees. The place is just overflowing with beauty. And she shifted her attention from her tumors to being able to appreciate the beauty around her, being able to feel at peace with her and her surroundings. And we put into her body mouth-watering, gourmet, vegan cuisine. Now, I know that almost sounds like an oxymoron. How could you put gourmet and vegan with cuisine? But Gary Null does it. And I was a big skeptic. You know, if I don't have meat, what the hell am I going to eat? Air? You know, meat, dairy, wheat, caffeine. Gary helps you to understand how delicious the things that you see growing out of the ground can be for you. So it's mouth-watering meals. We have stress management classes. We have emotional release work. We have people that come in that are specialized in this. We have yoga classes in a giant yoga hut right on a 10-acre lake with swans. I mean, it's something out of a movie. But when you experience the energy and you allow that energy in, everything changes in your life. I have people here that were just on the cusp. If you have anybody in your audience that's right on the cusp of saying, do I stay in this relationship or leave? Do I stay in this toxic job where I'm not being appreciated? Or do I stick around and adapt to it? I don't like the way my body looks. I'm in menopause or andropause, or I've been injured and now I'm overweight and I'm uncomfortable with my weight. You're right at the cusp, ready to make that change, but God, something just keeps pulling you back. This is the place to come to finally ground into your body what you need to do, and you develop the self-discipline and the information and the support and the love, everything you need to just do it. We have someone here that actually teaches art classes, art as a form of healing. So our creative members of the audience can come in and work with her different mediums. We have personal counseling. I do health counseling on everybody. You get a full half hour with me. It's all included in the price. You learn that Gary does lectures every evening, and it's life-transforming lectures that Gary gives. It's not just the stuff you hear on the radio. It goes way beyond that. I interview everyone before they come to this property, Eutrice. So I only allow happy, upbeat, enthusiastic people that are really excited about making positive changes in their lives. I cannot bring people onto the property that are negative, angry, that are complaining or quick to judge without getting information. Those kind of people, I have places I could send them, but it's not going to be here. So all of our rooms are semi-private so that you know you're going to be with someone who's nice and upbeat and happy. So you have to, if you want a private room, you let me know. We book up pretty quickly, and the openings I have right now are for the week of August 16th through the 22nd. And if you want to attend, I'm going to give you my number to call and just leave your name, your phone number, and say I'm interested in the retreat, and I will call you because I know it's coming up in just 2 weeks. So If you want to come on board, you want to be a part of this life-changing group, this is the time. Give me a call. My number is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. And people are walking away, Utrice, with new tools, healthy daily routines, hands-on information. We teach people sprouting and hydroponics and how to make healthy salad dressings, for instance, or our sauces for foods that are just absolutely delicious. So if people are interested, do give us a call, because this is going to be life-changing for you.
I know, so, in the short time that I have been following these protocols, it literally has been not just life-changing, but life-giving to me. I was supposed to have been dispatched from this earth quite a while ago, but I'm still here and I feel really good. I just had a checkup. I'm going for another one. And even the doctors are saying, well, you know, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm just doing what I do. But the tools that I have been given have really kept me going. And it's a dramatic and radical change, but it doesn't feel like it's a torture at all on your system. It feels like you're giving yourself a whole new opportunity at life. And I'm asking people to consider putting themselves first in this instance, really get to the idea that you deserve some time to pay attention to yourself and to someone you love. And consider strongly participating so that you have the tools to really turn things around. At my stage, it's quite a devastating diagnosis. But at the same time, and I heard it from Joyce in the clip that we heard, there's a turning around point even in a situation where things look bleak. And I don't feel that things are bleak at all now. I really don't. So I'm urging you to consider this and to participate and to give value and longevity to your life. So the number again, Luann, to call?
Yes, call 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. And I'll be sure to contact you sometime this evening.
Great. And also, let Luann know that you're calling. You heard it from me, and you heard it on Lead Stories, because there are some other things that you will learn when you talk with Luann about ways in which you can perhaps cut the cost of the program. You have a fast overview of that, Luann?
Of what?
Cutting the cost of the program?
Yes, we have we have something called the Work Study Program. If people want to help out behind the scenes to keep things clean and organized, and you don't mind, you know, putting in some hours of work each day, we have a lesser price for you. I'll go over all the prices with people and all the options when I call them, so that anyone that comes, it's going to be the right match for them. But I've got about 3 slots left open for the second week. We were full up, but I had people that had to rearrange their schedule. Some people moved up to the second week. And so I have a couple of openings for the third week. And I would love to invite the people from your audience to join us.
And I plan to be there too. So 631-504-6198 is the number to call. Thanks, Luann, for being with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm looking forward to seeing you and everyone in your audience.
Thank you so much. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. I hope it was valuable to you. I really do want to stress this question of taking your health very seriously, But getting to know the tools, getting to know how to use these tools in turning your life and your health situation around, it is a very, very important thing to do for yourself and those who are close to you. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the Lifeboat Hour with Carolyn Baker. We'll see each other, hopefully on Monday. And you can reach me in the meantime at leadstories@gmail.com. Please know, as always, it's a pleasure and a great, great privilege to be in your esteemed company. Over the weekend, do find yourself connected with people who add positive dimension to your life. And we'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.